Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Wayfair's big sale is back. For 3 days only, October 5th through 7th, score up to 80% off everything home with free shipping site-wide. Shop Waydays starting October 5th at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Last night, Iran launched a massive missile attack on Israel, and Iran described the assault as defensive and said it was aimed at military bases. Iran also stated that the attack was a response to Israel's aggression in Lebanon and Gaza. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has sworn to retaliate. Also, the US Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said Washington will defend its interests in the Middle East and work with its ally Israel. I'm joined now by Duncan Bullivan, CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning.
Were you surprised at the extent of the Iranian attack?
No, they had to ramp up their previous efforts, which were paltry in comparison to last night's attack. And I think, you know, the Iranian credibility is on the line here. I mean, Hezbollah, don't forget, are their number one proxy. They are the closest allies that Iran has got in the region. And they've taken a hell of a pasting over the last week or so. And the Iranians needed to be seen to be responding in kind. But again, this has had very little impact on Israel. And I think we're now all waiting to see what the next steps are.
The question is, who is playing whom here? Because if Israel is deliberately provoking Iran into some sort of action, as we saw last evening, to give it the excuse to go in hard on Iran, perhaps targeting its nuclear facilities.
Well, I think there's a lot of speculation as to what comes next. But I think one thing we all have to remember is that at this stage of the game, all available U.S. Military and political intelligence, all available Israeli intelligence will all be pooled at this point in terms of not restraint, but in terms of preventing wider escalation beyond what is happening at the moment. The problem the Iranians have is that their entire strategy of the last 20 years has been to build strong proxies in the region. But in terms of their own military infrastructure and in terms of their own ability to wage a more conventional war against Israel, it's very limited. Iran simply doesn't have the infrastructure to support it. The biggest concern, of course, now is going to be everybody's going to be focused back on the nuclear issue. It was not that long ago, I think it was about 20 years ago, when there was a huge debate about the Iranian nuclear capability. And one very eminent politician was asked, at what point will you know that Iran has got a nuclear weapon? To which the response was, when Tel Aviv is a smoldering wreck. So I think there is going to be focus on that. It is inevitable that Israel will seek now to degrade Iran's strategic military capability, its reach. But all of this happens within a framework of considerable U.S. Intercept capability and intelligence. So I think, yeah, the White House has made very clear that they're going to keep supporting Israel in this endeavor. And it remains now to see what the Israelis do in response to this latest attack.
Now, the problem with Iran having a nuclear weapon is whether or when it could be used, because you've got, we remember from the Cold War, the thesis of mutually assured destruction. The acronym is great, MAD, because once it's used, there'll be retaliation, and you know that you condemn your own population to the most harrowing misery.
Yes, indeed. And it was, you know, it was the cornerstone of Cold War deterrence. The problem is that nuclear weapons alone don't have a deterrent effect. The only way that nuclear deterrence works is if you've got it as a backstop, but your conventional options are also considerable and varied. And this was the other plank of course of the Cold War. What you've got now in the Middle East, of course, is, you know, you've got political and theoretical leaderships that don't necessarily look at warfare as a means to an end. They look at warfare as simply a means of killing as many of the other opposing religions and ideologies as possible. I think the biggest concern at the moment is that there has been such a high degree of interface between Russia, China, Iran, and others, including North Korea, and the possibility of swapping technical data, swapping technical capabilities. I mean, the Iranians are sending hundreds and hundreds of Shahid drones to Russia. In return for what? Cash? Military technology? Guidance systems? We're not entirely sure. I'm sure there are those that are aware of it. But if it comes to swapping nuclear technology or nuclear capability, then we're in a completely different game. And I'm not for one moment suggesting that that is what is going to happen. But I think we are, you know, we discussed it, I think, last week. Everybody's talking about, oh, escalation. This is what it looks like. This is what war between Iran and Israel looks like. It's a hybrid warfare. It's going to be in part led by proxies. The Houthis, don't forget, have been firing ballistic missiles at Israel as well in the last 24 hours. The Houthis are really crippling shipping now. And I think what you're going to look at, you know, from the Red Sea and beyond, is the response in many ways, the Iranian response to Western support for Israel, is going to be going for the economic jugular vein, which is making the Suez Canal less and less of an option. So shipping costs go up, inflation goes up as a result of goods being more expensive in shops. This is how this thing plays out over the next few months and possibly years. But also the other thing to bear in mind is that within the wider Jewish community and Israeli interests around the world, there is a heightened degree of concern and a heightened degree of fear. I can, you know, I've got experience of this in the last 24 hours with questions that are being asked by communities around the world as they realize that, you know, maybe Iranian proxies and the occasional bombing in world capitals may well be a result of this wide and fast escalation.
Generally speaking, does anti-Israeli sentiment, and it's anti-Netanyahu's government sentiment rather than anti-the Israeli people, but does it ultimately translate into anti-Israeli sentiment and then into anti-Semitism?
I'm afraid it does. I mean, I think there are so many commentators that are brought onto media to talk about being proudly Jewish but anti-Israeli. You know, if you were to go now to Israel, you would find the vast majority of Israelis are in support of what is happening in southern Lebanon. Don't forget, they've taken a hell of a pounding over the last year from Hezbollah rockets. It's not as if Hezbollah were innocent in all this. So I think that, unfortunately, especially when you're looking at Iranian-backed acts of terror and murder, is that a Jewish target is good enough. And the differentiation between Israeli and the dreaded Yehudi targets is less concerning for them than it perhaps might be for us in the West.
Just a question, maybe you can't answer this, but if there were such a thing as an Iranian nuclear weapon, an air delivered either via a bomber or on the top of a missile, and the Iron Dome defense is activated, what happens when one of those nuclear weapons is intercepted midair by an Iron Dome missile?
My limited knowledge of nuclear weapons, is being tested, but I'll answer the best I can. It depends really on what the mechanism is being used for the detonation of the warhead. If it's barometric, i.e. it's based upon what height it's at before it goes off, the Iron Dome would have to get it before it hit its descent. If it was a single warhead fired from a ballistic missile, the missile itself may be well be traveling too fast. The warhead may be traveling too fast to be intercepted. If it was a conventional nuclear bomb that was dropped either by a drone or by an aircraft, then the chances of it being intercepted would be pretty minimal. But I think that the thing to bear in mind is that the intelligence picture would pick up on this way before the operation was launched. And I think that what the Israelis and the Americans would be seeking to do would be to down that system or even prevent its launch in the first place. But to answer your question directly, depending on what mechanism was being used to deliver the payload, the Iron Dome would stand a very good chance of intercepting it, but I would expect it to be a very unsophisticated delivery mechanism based on the low level of Iran's technology within the nuclear warfare theater.
Duncan Bulavan, CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.